Great. Here we go. You can sit. Great. Please.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, let's do it. Cover.
I'd like to welcome. I'd like to welcome everyone to the opening, I guess, community share. We started last year in the middle of the year. I'm going to try and hopefully have a lot more of these community share shambayas, different share for men, for women. After the share is over, there is on that back table over there, like just a name sheet, just so we can have your name, email addresses, so we can keep people up on the share that are going on, so it makes it a lot easier. And also just if you have any suggested topics, and also if anyone would like to help make it easier, so I can have someone else hang up signs in different parts of different buildings, make it easier, so it'll make it a little easier for me, and also just so we can help from the men's side and from the women's side, by all means, you can come to me after this year. I'd like to thank Rabbi Maybrook for volunteering and to get this share tonight. This is a part one of a two-part series. Next week, I don't know if you saw the sign, but next week there's part two. The men's is Motzei Son Gedalia. It's going to be taking place in the MUS classrooms. That's the easiest place. We'll go to one of the classrooms back there. The first share room, well, one of those share rooms just look back there. And the women's, would Mirza Shem be taking place in building 490. That's the one right before this one. Apartment 3C, the Shockets apartment. The times are for both Shurim are at 8:30, same time as tonight. Okay? And that's pretty much it. Thank you again for having me.
Shout out to Avi and Rebecca for being masada this beautiful idea of community Shurim. People always point out that community is one of the hardest things to build. You can have a lot of people, but in order to make a community, it takes extra effort. I remember we had a meeting with President Joel, Kol Elyon. We had the fancy meetings on Thursdays with the president sometimes. So President Joel pointed out, Amachas Medina, one of the biggest problems of the community is that you have people that live in different places, and when everyone has something that the community does together, you just don't get a good turnout. So it's a very special thing, Baruch Hashem, to have the Shutfas, Avi and Rebecca, that were massaged so beautifully, and Baruch Hashem, the community that's responding to the idea of being a community. And we should be zochet to always have Aptus as a community, both this side and that side, the Zen side and the Mayut side. So we should be zochet, Bezer Hashem, to watch tonight Yerushalayim, Yirat Kodesh. Also, it's a zechus to be here. This is my first time in the Willard's apartment. So it's a very big zechus to be here. Thank you very much. On behalf of everyone for opening up your apartment, so Ahuva and Rav Yehuda, you should be zochet in many simchas, Bezer Hashem. You've been zochet the Rabbim for many years, Bezer Hashem. It's strange to have a shir on Shalom Bayis when we're sitting, Be'ema, Be'ira, Pachad, Yom HaDin, a few days away. Isn't it strange? There's a shmuz. But obviously the answer is that Shalom Bayis is an integral part of Yadus. When we face up with the Shbaruch Hu in Yom HaDin, one of the things we have to answer for is how our bias is. We construct our bias with Torah, with mitzvos, with shalom, with shalva. Be'ezra Hashem, the answer for everyone should be yes. But tonight's discussion is to help improve, to hone, to fine-tune a little bit. Make sure that when we face HaKadosh Baruch Hu Be'ezra Hashem, and Yom HaDin, Rosh Hashanah, Be'ezra Hashem, and Yom Kippur, we should be Zochet to be Zakai Bedin and answer HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hopefully that we indeed are the best people we can be, including the fact that our bias is the best bias that can be. Kenny Ransom. What is Shalom Bias? Obviously it doesn't apply to me, it always applies to other people. They need to work on their Shalom Bias. What is Shalom Bias? Usually you translate Shalom as peace. But the Mefarshim points out that perhaps a more precise definition of the word shalom into English would be harmony. Shalom means the ability for all different parts of something to work in unison, to work well, to work coherently, to produce the best way they can. And that's what shalom bias really is. That's the aim of shalom bias. Not just not to get upset at each other, but to be able to be working so much in harmony that the husband and wife and the rest of the bias could be the best bias it could be. It's my zechus to have prepared these words together with my dear wife, Chani, And although I'm the only one speaking here, it's really on behalf of both of us that I'm offering these ideas. Ezra Shem will have a short discussion now, and then we'll have questions afterwards. So let's hold up on questions now. We'll have the questions at the end. And does everyone have outline? There's outline. Everyone in the back has outlines? David, you have in the back?
No.
Vori, you don't have? I want to welcome my sister, the new Kala, and my brother-in-law, David Wasserwell, in the back. There are many things it takes to build a bias with Shalom v'Shalom. Perhaps three of the midos that are necessary can be defined in a cute English arrangement, the three D's, to have a 3D marriage. You see on the outline in front of you, dedicate, develop, and discover. Dedicate. In order to have a marriage which is successful, which is really b'shalom of l'shalva, one has to be dedicated to it. Each person, husband and wife, has the ability to create their own destiny, to decide what the marriage will be like. As they say, matches are made in heaven. But despite that, a good marriage is made here on earth. Amri Inshi, many people like saying that to have a good marriage you need to have work. You need to work at it. What does that mean? What does it mean to work in a marriage? What type of work? There are many answers. But simply said, by definition, marriage consists of two people, husband and wife, and people. Where HaKadosh Baruch Hu made people is Ein Tzadik Aretz Asher Yaseh Tov V'lo Yaseh Tov. No person is perfect. Every single person in the world has fallacies. Every person has shortcomings. Every person has idiosyncrasies. Perhaps the hardest thing about the Kasha Shebe Mikdash, the hardest thing to work at with marriage, is focusing not on the other person's fallacies, what the other person does in a certain situation that could have been better, but focusing on what I could do. It's not my geschäft, it's not my business how he or she reacts. I first have to discuss, decide, figure out how I should react. The famous Gemara, very Nogea, as we approach Yom HaDin, about Rabbi Elazar ben Dardai, a person who was a terrible, terrible chote, and he realized all of a sudden that he was doing such a veros. He wants to do teshuva. He said, Shemayim Ba'aretz, please, beg for mercy for me. They refused. He said, Shemesh V'Yareach, beg for mercy for me. They refused. Harim Vos, please, nature, ask for mercy for me in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They refused. Rabbi Elazar ben Dardai said, Ein Hadavar Tali Elabi. I see, it's up to me. He put his hand between his knees, he cried, and he was chozer b'teshuva. The famous Gemara tells us, Yesh kona olam b'shah achas. He was kona his entire olam hava in 1 second. He was makir, that to really grow in avodas Hashem, ein hadavar toi elabi. And this is very true in marriage. In a marriage, it's much easier to focus on what a person does wrong, the person you're facing, the other person. But perhaps the hardest part of working on a marriage, the hardest part of making a marriage, you know, has it, is to realize, I don't know how I'll be. I have to be concerned with how I deal with things, how I react, what I notice. It's much easier to focus on what they can change. I have to focus on what I can change. The next part of working on marriage is that marriages are always a work in progress. Whether you're in Shana Rishona, Shana Shnia, Shana 10, Shana 20, Shana 30, Shana 40, marriages constantly change. Dynamics change, situations change, people change. Since so many variables change in any given marriage, marriages constantly have to adjust. People have to adjust. Human beings are always going through growth. They point out that no person, I think, is the same. After every 28 days, almost all the cells in the body die, something like that. Almost all person's cells, people always change. No, there's some statistic, all the science people. So they point out people change. People are not the same. But not only because of the cells. People's circumstances, people's external and internal circumstances change all the time. Marriages are constantly works in progress. And every time that there's a new situation, a new variable in a marriage, that's an opportunity. an opportunity to grow, to appreciate, and to adjust. Appreciate a person's uniqueness and adjust their specific new nature. So work is not only to focus on how I react to something, but to focus on how the marriage I had yesterday is not the same as the marriage today. Things have to constantly be adjusted and reassessed. A wise person once pointed out that a great marriage is not when the perfect couple comes together, it's when an imperfect couple learns to enjoy their differences. And these differences are constant. They're always there. They don't change. And they have to be dealt with the shalom of the shalom. The third part about working in a marriage is, to quote Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, whistle while you work. The avodah kasha, the hard work of marriage, is not a work of gashmius, even though we live in Olam Hazeh. This is no less than a work of ruchnius. First of all, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter pointed out that any given person's gashmius is someone else's ruchnius. What I need, if I need Coke, because I walked up the hill from Bennett, and I'm tired out, so that's, for me, the Coke is considered gashmius, but the will is giving me the Coke is ruchnius. That's their chesed. And do chesed with the Coke, what could be better? In general, that's a famous quote from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, that one person's ruchnius, one person's gashmius is my ruchnius. So first of all, that's true in marriage, in any situation. Whenever a person has to focus on the simple, folding the laundry, cleaning the house, going shopping, that ruchnius, that gashmius, for one person, through the ruchnius for the other person. But not only that, Chazal tell us that ish v'isha, shalom b'neihem, shechina b'neihem. When there's real shalom, there's real shalva between husband and wife, the shechina itself is in the bayis. What more holy work could there be, whether you're a chassid or a misnagid, than bringing the shechina to your own bayis? So aside from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's idea that always doing chesed, helping another person, is considered ruchnius, but certainly in a marriage, even the most gashmi things are ruchnius. Cooking supper, taking out the garbage, that's avodas Hashem. My house, Baruch Hashem, with our four beautiful kids, the Chaste Hashem, after a day, the kids moseying around the house the whole day, then usually the house is not in tip-top shape. So usually, that means part of the avodas gashmius, which becomes ruchnius in Yimuchad Mezuman, is to clean up the house. And I'll tell you, with all the hachanas for dalad minim, going shopping for hours, making sure you are beautiful of an esrod, making sure that they're really kosher to the mahadrin, I think it's easier to do that than the ruchnius, the avodas Hashem, of cleaning up the apartment, at least for me. My wife is a cinch. But for me, it's definitely ruchnius, but I think it's ruchnius that comes a little bit harder. Shopping. We know that Yesod in Washington Heights is that whenever you go to Kifut, you can probably get 75% of your shopping list. Never in one turn in Kifut you get everything, because they're usually out of something and something else is on sale, so therefore it's been out since Sunday. So usually you get, if you're lucky, 75% of any shopping list when you go to Kifut. But imagine that pain of going to Kifut and getting 75% of your shopping list, that maximum, used to be a chore, but now that's Avodas Hashem, Kavaldik. That's ruchnius. Wow. Ashrinu Matov Chalkeinu. They point out that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a tremendous chesed. On Erev Yom Kippur, he gave us a very easy mitzvah. As we're counting down the minutes of Yom Kippur, we get to eat. Pretty easy mitzvah to eat. So Kaviyachol, even though going to Kippur is a little bit harder, think how lucky we are to have these ideas, which are gashmius, which are banal, simple, not infused with kedusha at the outset, when they're done in the concept of a marriage, a ruchnius, ashreinu, until chotinu. To some, it's painful to say the word machlokas. Oi, Eisha machlokas. What Klai Yisrael has suffered because of machlokas, what marriages have been broken because of machlokas, what calamities we've suffered because of machlokas. in reality, disagreements are part of a normal marriage. Every single marriage in the world has disagreements. And it's important to have realistic expectations, even before we discuss how to deal with the disagreements. The very fact, the hanacha, the fact that the disagreements are normal, that hopefully every single person in this room has disagreements in their marriage, is an important hanacha, to realize that whatever apartment you live in, whatever house you live in, whatever language you speak, being married by definition means there are going to be disagreements. That's the metzias. That's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the world. The one kasha people might be thinking of, what's the one kasha, what's the one marriage in the world there was no disagreements in the past 50 years? Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. What do we do with that story? Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rav Goldberg points out, as well as others, every book had the story, that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, at his wife's levaya, stood there and said, Rabbi, you should just know, the minute is, that a husband, Rachman al-Assad, asked his wife for mechila, after her patira. But I don't even need to ask my wife mechila. We never had machlokas. Tell it. Are you talking? So firstly, Rabbi Willard pointed out, Rabbi Mordechai Willard Shlita pointed out, that Hagufa, the very fact that that story made the headlines, the fact that we all know about it, or most of us know about it, is Gufa the Raya, that that's the exception that proves the rule. That's Rosh Hashanah, he was himself, but that's not the rule for anyone else. And it's not even something worth striving for. For example, we point out, no matter how much Torah you learn, no matter how much Asmada a person has, it's not shy to be the Ramban. Perhaps, maybe a person has Shifa to be Rav Moshe Feinstein, Halavai. But there's certain things that are just beyond expectations. So it's Tenor Zion, it can't be the person who's going to be the Ramban. So Hu'adin, this story of Rosh Hashanah is so abnormal, even though he lives in our door, it's just an impossible reality for people to think about. And therefore, it's not even worth discussing because it's a pellet. But more than that, to trust him in terms of how this happened, it seems, based on different sources, that Rosh Hashanah's marriage to his wife was slightly different than the marriage that most people have. Different stories, some say that in the Yichud room he told his wife, you just know for the first 20 years, you're always right, and then afterwards, I'm always right, or something like that. Or it was the fact that all Ruchnius decisions I get, or Gashmius decisions you get, meaning some agree, some sort of hanacha that is not the case in most situations. Meaning there was something behind the story. It wasn't just the godless of Rosh Hashanah. Those are pshatim. But even without the pshatim, it's an important thing to realize that before Rosh Hashanah, after Rosh Hashanah, during the days of Rosh Hashanah, chol shvulei yavar, marriages by definition have machlokas. They have disagreements. And it's important to expect it, to realize that they exist. It's not a terrible thing. Expectations themselves are very, very healthy. But more than that, not only Ray Willard pointed out Rav Shlomo Zalman, Ray Willard also pointed out to me once that Rav Uzband Shlita, the Rosh Yeshiva of Tells, was a chassan. He just got married many years ago. And he married a girl from Cleveland. Rebbe's husband is from Cleveland. So the first yontif, after they were married, he went as a new chassan to Cleveland, to his in-laws. And who of all people was in Cleveland in that yontif? Who else? But Rav David Lushitz. Rav David Lushitz was in the same minyan as Rav Uzband. And he heard, oh, new chassan of Rav Uzband. He's a new chassan, just got married. So he went to wish him mazel tov. And Rav David met Rabbi Uzband, and said to him, aside from Mazel Tov, three words. The next entry on the outline. Zi vet veinin. Anyone know what that means? Zi, she will cry. She will cry. That's Rav David. That's Rav David said to Rav Uzband. Of all things to say to Nuh Chassan, after Mazel Tov, you should know she will cry. What's pshat? Rav David's point was to point out, Tainhan Adar, exactly what we're saying. Just know. In every single healthy marriage, there are discussions, there are disagreements, there are different points of view. Baruch Hashem. Chodesh Baruch Hu made people different. Their parts of family are different. There's a difference. Even in a marriage where people love each other, people commit to going together, to working through everything. It happens. And the Hanukkah itself, the fact that such a thing can happen, the fact that such a thing is normal and that it exists everywhere, itself is part of the solution. It's important to be makir. But not only that, not only is this something normal, often it's a bracha. Instead of being esha machlokas, what machlokas can often do is be an impetus for growth. Machlokas can actually help people improve their marriage. The difference often between a marriage that needs fixing and a healthy marriage is not whether there's machlokas or not. Sometimes not even the incidence, the frequency of machlokas. The difference is whether the machlokas leads to a further breakdown or machlokas leads to growth, to opportunity to sit down, to understand each other better, to open up, to perhaps be able to share one's inner self a little bit more. Machlokas often is a catalyst for that. So instead of being a kol rachman otzlan, machlokas can be an impetus to improving one's marriage. Because instead of being, let's say, the eye during the storm, the sun comes out. Hopefully not tomorrow, but today. Because after disagreements, people can sit down and really understand each other better. That improves a marriage. Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem for machlokas. Unfortunately, sometimes machlokas can get a little bit heated. A person can feel emotionally distant, Rahman al-San, from his or her spouse. It happens. That's part of the normal persistence of machlokas. One important result to keep in mind during machlokas, Yehareg v'al yavar, is that never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, should the existence of a machlokas weaken one's commitment to one's spouse. Since machlokas are so normal, since they happen to everyone, in every situation, one should never say, hey, you know, if I wouldn't have married this person, if I would have married someone else down the block, then look, that person's such a sweetie, such a monogamous person, he or she would never have machlokas. I'm stuck with this person, you know, he or she has his bad side, that's what makes the machlokas happen. Chas v'shalom, why? Because it's not true. Every single person in the world, when put with another person in the room, will eventually have machlokas. So the argument has a fallacy. Obviously, it's not true to say that if I marry someone else, it will be better, because every marriage has machlokas. And one should never, ever say that even though emotionally I feel a little bit distant, it ever weakens my commitment, chas v'shalom, to my spouse. But unfortunately, machlokas is everywhere. Before we leave the issue of machlokas, as I mentioned, sometimes the very fact that we expect it itself is important. It's important to know that it exists. Hu Adin, there are two specific situations in which machlokas can be a little bit more heightened, and it's important to know to expect machlokas then as well. Mishnah Berurah tells us that if a wife is a little bit late in lighting candles on Erev Shabbos, the husband should tell her, be mezayrus her to light benachas. Not b'kas, because on Erev Shabbos, the kettle's already boiling, all you need is to have a little bit more of a loud voice, and it explodes. Mishnah Berurah points it out. Didn't live in America, didn't live now. For the past 1,000 years, or maybe perhaps more, since Shabbos existed, the minhag was that as Shabbos gets closer, especially on a short Shabbos, things are a little bit more tense. So it's not necessarily true that machlokas will happen, but people are not going to be themselves. That's the norm. That's what happens. Erev Shabbos sometimes brings out the, let's say, not the best in people. And sometimes the solution is not necessarily fighting that, but just to know that it exists, to know that it happens. That hanukkah, the very fact that one can expect it itself, is worth a tremendous amount. In fact, the Chassidish Rebbe, the Satmar Rebbe, they point out, says, we know, in yeshivas, we know that Los of Arish Mechom Ashrasechem is Machokas, it's Havar Elav Yitzos, if it's supposed to be a paradigm of one of the Malachos. What's Pshat in Dafka of all the Malachos that the Torah signaled out, it's Dafka picked out Havara. Los of Arish Mechom Ashrasechem Yom HaShabbos. And the Sabbath Rebbe points out, it's not Lav or Lechalei, but he thought Pasha Pshat is that on Shabbos, as the song says, Abba's lighting candles, everyone's at home, Shabbat Shalom. So if everyone's at home, it's very possible to have a lot more tension. Usually, everyone's running to and fro, people don't really see each other enough, so how much tension is there in a house on a given day? But on Shabbos, everyone's home, then Eish HaMachlokas, Rechman Otzlan, is more prevalent. So the Torah says specifically, Lo Sivar Eish B'chom Eshu Sechem Yom HaShabbos. On Shabbos specifically, one should not have Machlokas. It's a Vart, not Pesach Pshat, but the Yesod is true, whether you're in the Satmar house, whether you're in Williamsburg, whether you're in Tina, whether in Washington Heights, wherever you are, the idea of on Shabbos, and who was in Arab Shabbos, where everyone's running to and fro everyone's home, it's normal. It's important to expect that there's a possibility of people not being their best. Likewise, often people have a very big misconception as far as what Shana Rishona is for. People often think that Shana Rishona is a time, you know, just got married, there's no kids. It used to be when we were dating, we had to go on dates, then I had to worry about how she's going to get home, how I'm going to get home. We had to try to make sure that it wouldn't be too late. At going to Rav Shafi, make sure there's no yichud. So dating itself is a pain. Comes along marriage, great, we can go on dates. Happens to be that we pay both sides of the bill. But either way, it's much easier to be dating once after you're married. Shana Rishona is time to date, to get to know each other, benachas. And all of a sudden, the truth hits like a tornado. Shana Rishona is supposed to be. It's nice to have that too, but it's normal. Shana Rishona is a tremendous time of adjustments. It's normal to have a lot more discussion, a lot more disagreement, a lot more raw nerves during Shana Rishona than perhaps during the rest of marriage. That's not abnormal, that's part of the course. You have two people, even the two most wonderful people in the world, that think they know each other, but then get married and discover their other side of each other's personality. They see each other for 24 hours a day, waking, going to sleep. They're exposed to all different sides of the person. Obviously, that's going to cause more tension. How could it not? And it's not necessarily important during Shana Rishona to say we want to stop the Malkuchos, because as we mentioned, that could be an impetus for growth. But it's important to expect it. It's a hanacha. It has to be something that's viewed as normal. It's normal during Shana Rishona to have a lot more of growing pains than during the rest of marriage. Baruch Hashem, in this dar, we've realized that there's two different types of machlos, Rachman Otzlan, a person can have. Chol ha'guf and chol ha'nefesh. Just like we acknowledge for thousands of years there's something called physical illness, in this story, Baruch Hashem, we realize there's also something called mental illness. And it's an illness no less than physical illness. And in today's day and age, Baruch Hashem, more people approach doctors for mental illness in a similar fashion as approaching doctors for physical illness. But it's still not the same. There's still a little bit of a stigma, a little bit of a taboo about mental illness. But there's a certain type of mental health professional, a marriage counselor, which should have no taboo associated with it. In many situations, people need a little bit of help coping with the ins and outs of marriage. That doesn't mean there's a mental or physical health problem, Rachman al-Islam. It's just important to be able to turn to another person, whether it's a Rav, an older friend sometimes, a Rav, or a person, Chenela Chachaber, a person that you have to pay to do his job. To sometimes be able to visit a person, to give a little bit more of marriage advice, is not a bad thing. It doesn't have to be something that you distrust with people, but it's not something that people should even be embarrassed about. It's something which might be, in the long run, very helpful. Some people don't need it, some people do need it, and some people do need it, and they say they don't need it. And it's important for each person to know where they are. It's a very normal thing, Baruch Shem, in today's day and age, but even before that, to realize that turning to another person to help iron out some kinks in marriage is a very wonderful thing, and sometimes very, very helpful. The last point, which obviously doesn't apply to anyone here, it's important to realize that there are ways, even if disagreements are normal, there are certain things that are totally out of bounds. Physical contact in a negative way is totally out of bounds. Of course, I don't have to mention to anyone in this room, but unfortunately, of all the important things that Torah Web has to have shiurim about, there's going to be shiurim in a few months from some of our rebbeim about the incidents that no one talks about, the incidents of Rachman al-Islam abuse in the community. I'm sure it applies to no one here, but even if someone else knows someone else that it applies to, it's important to be aware of that. For both husbands, if they feel they can't control themselves, Rachman al-Islam, often it's husbands to be aware, to know that that's totally unacceptable. Physical contact in a derogatory fashion is unacceptable. And for Rachman al-Islam, those that are on the receiving end, to know that people realize it's unacceptable. That the Shalom Task Force, Rachman al-Islam, in its first year received over 3,000 phone calls, Rachman al-Islam. It's something which is unacceptable, which can perhaps be made to look like it has the acquiescence of halacha, but it doesn't. should never be done. The next D, develop. A Makas Medina, perhaps one of the biggest nisyonos of our generation, was a trick the Yetzirah thought of. Yetzirah tries to make us be nichshal averos, and poor Yetzirah, if he tries to make one of us eat treif, push him off. B'mechal Shabbos, chas v'shalom. Yetzirah doesn't succeed, Baruch Hashem, in our dar, in making people do real averos. The Yetzirah is smart. What do you do instead? He tries to undermine our Kiyum HaMitzvos. Perhaps one of the biggest problems in our generation is the lack of respect for oneself, the lack of self-esteem. It happens to be true throughout America. Go into any Barnes & Noble, any bookstore, there are tons and tons of books, self-help, trying to help people boost their self-esteem. But specifically in the frum world, it's a terrible kvala among B'nai Torah, B'nos Torah. The Yetzirah makes us try to question our Kiyum HaMitzvos, question our very selves. That itself is subject for perhaps a more lengthy discussion. But it's a terrible kvala that exists among many people. Not only can it affect one's own Avodas Hashem, one's own performance of Torah and mitzvos, but it certainly can affect one's marriage. If one wants to have a happy marriage, one has to be happy himself or herself. Don't forget the happy. In fact, the way people are made are with eyes looking out. It's much easier to look at someone else and say what he has, what she has, what she does positively, what he really is good at, and not to focus on the brachos that each and every person has within themselves. One often has to look within oneself and realize what a beautiful person each person is. Without that, there's no way to have a happy marriage. Every person has positive attributes, and it's important to focus on those and convey them to one's spouse. Yesterday I was on the other side of Washington Heights, the other part of our same community, and there was a boy who was selling raffles, going from house to house, and there was a mother who had three or four kids pulling at her, and she was trying to figure out how the raffles should work, and she couldn't understand how the raffles should work, which part, which stub did the raffle people keep, which stub did she get to keep, and she said, "Oh, stupid mommy," she said about herself. I said to myself, first of all, her kids are there. There's no reason the kids have to hear about stupid mommy. But she's there. She shouldn't put herself down either. Everyone makes mistakes. Everyone sometimes is imperfect. Everyone doesn't have coffee in time and their mind doesn't process things necessarily. If people make mistakes, kappa, people make mistakes. Never should one put oneself down. That's true in general for self-esteem. It's not healthy to put oneself down. But not only that, in a marriage, imagine a husband coming home after a long day, and his wife says, "You'd never believe all the stupid things I did today." So let's talk about Rashi tells us. What's Pashat Pshat? What's Rashi? What's Pshat in the wife? Wife really wants her husband to say, "Don't worry, doll, you're not so stupid. Come on. You know, everyone makes mistakes." She's sort of reaching out for a little bit of comfort, for reassurance. But often, if you say something enough, you start to believe it. It's possible that she'll start believing you. But worse than that, her husband, who by definition could love her for 10 years, 20 years, know her very well, might start believing it too. It doesn't help, even in a joke, to constantly put oneself down, especially in a situation, in a dar like we live in, that self-esteem is sometimes so trodden down on the floor. Another part of developing a good marriage, developing oneself in a good marriage, is to dress the part. Whether a person has to run to work and therefore has to be dressed in tip-top shape, or is zocheh to be in Dalat Amashel Halacha in Beis Medrash. It's important not only because, as Rashi points out, that's the way a Ben Torah and a Bas Torah should dress, in a way which is becoming to a Ben Torah Bas Torah, neat, kempt, shaven perhaps. It's important for one's spouse. It's important to respect one's spouse by dressing in a nice way in order to make sure that the spouse understands that she or he is respected. That's perhaps the most important job of all. On the other hand, if a wife or husband is not so good at that, if a husband sometimes is unkempt, the wife sometimes is home all day with the kids and she can't put herself together, it's the opposite spouse's job not to be machpid. Meaning, it's the husband's job to shave, it's the wife's job not to be machpid in her own kavod if he doesn't. If she views it as a problem, perhaps it's a beautiful thing to sit down and discuss, but not to take a pashtun, not to just discuss and say, oh, you know, you never even shave. It's important, on the one hand, for the husband to be mechabed his wife, for the wife to be mechabed her husband, but it's important for the other side not to be mechabed. Another part of developing oneself, is despite the fact that marriage is often very time-consuming, things only get busier and busier and busier. Often people had interest before they were married. In fact, it's very possible that on dates those things came out. The reason I liked her was that she was multifaceted. She had hobbies, she had things she liked doing, he had special things that he was really good at. It's important to let those things still be part of you even if you're married. Perhaps not the same scale, perhaps not the same intensity, but the richness of a person's personality should come out even after they're married. First of all, it's important for the spouse. The spouse appreciated that. Why not give the spouse the full advantage of who you really are? But it's also important for oneself. Marriage should not swallow oneself. Marriage should enhance oneself. And if one feels that all one's midos cannot be manifested, then that itself is something that has to be addressed. Similarly, I remember when I was, before they had the fancy courses in the SRs, especially before they have now fancy, even more chiyuvim for the SRs, for the rabbinic training program. Perhaps one of the most beloved teachers in SR was Dr. Irving Levitz, the person who was Miyase, who put together a lot of the courses they have now in the Smicha program in YU. And he taught pastoral psychology. So he once taught us that in every marriage, there's some sort of a Venn diagram. Venn diagrams are diagrams of different circles. I'm saying this correctly, Matt? Different circles which are focusing, which are somewhat meeting and somewhat distant from each other. So let's view husband as one circle, wife as another circle, and it's important in marriage to try to find the balance of how those circles are supposed to overlap. On the one hand, if you have two circles which only meet on the periphery, that marriage has all the spark taken out of it. It's not a marriage. It's perhaps two people that are roommates, they both accomplish, but there's really no connection. On the other hand, though, equally as unhealthy, if the two circles totally overlap, one over the other, to the extent that each person loses their own identity, their only identity is that of their spouse, that's also very unhealthy. That's also very unproductive. The key to a successful marriage is trying to figure out the way to have some sort of shil hazahav, trying to figure out, sometimes based on society, sometimes based upon personality, sometimes based upon need, the way to have the circles overlap and still be separate, somewhere in the middle. And the middle is the beautiful part of marriage in which they are a symphony. They harmonize together, creating b'hayu l'vaser echad, being part of a marriage of shalom v'shalva. But it's important to have those different, diverse aspects of their own personality. Be able to have situations in which they can be themselves. Perhaps one of the most terrible things that happens in a community, especially when a community is close-knit and people live near each other, is that people often can be involved in false barometers for their marriage. My husband doesn't do that. Hey, that's a good husband. He does that. My wife, she never looks like that. How come my wife doesn't dress like she dresses? How come he never gets upset? Why is he always so benachas? Very often people can look, even though they really shouldn't, at other people for false barometers of how marriage should be. First of all, Torah Kedoshah tells us, essentially the verse says in Israel Losachmod. Pashut Pshat Losachmod means that if I walk away and I really like this shtender, then I should not want to take this shtender away from the willers. Losachmod, I shouldn't have any chemda desire this shtender. But Rav Shapter often points out that the Bnei Yisastar, in the Sefer Derech Putudechan Mitzvos, points out from an Alshich that Losachmod even means that if I say, hey, this shtender is really nice, I wouldn't take it from the willers shtender, but I want to get the exact same shtender. That's what I want, and I make sure to get the exact same shtender. Often that borders on Losachmod as well. And imagine the Alshech is really talking about not shtenders, he's talking about marriage. He says a person looks at another person's spouse and says, hey, not that I'm taking that way that person's spouse, chas v'shalom, but look at the mitzvos that person's spouse has. It would be nice if my spouse had that too. That is no less Losachmod than Rachmana Litzlan taking something which belongs to someone else. But not only that, it's very imprudent, aside from Torah, not religiously speaking, just speaking based on normal, common sense. Rav Kahn, Shlita, anybody's from Rav Kahn here, I think Rav Kahn has a rule that when a husband and wife are in Shana Rishona, they should never have any couples over during the whole first year, and they should never go to any other couples during the whole first year. To the best of my ability, to the best of my knowledge, I think that Rav Kahn has this Shlita. And one should understand it, although not necessarily subscribe to the Shita, but one should understand how when a person is trying to miyase their own bias, a person is trying to set up their own house, then it's very dangerous to see on Friday night everything benachas, oh, she's a great cook, the house is so quiet, everything's together, I get home, and everything was topsy-turvy. It's very, very difficult to see a snapshot of someone else's life and extrapolate from that how your life should be. Of course, it's inappropriate. But people are people. Even if one doesn't subscribe to Rav Kahn's approach, the idea we can all relate to. It's very important not to look at another spouse and say, oh, that's the way so-and-so is. I wish my spouse had similar talents, similar personality, similar dress. Not only because it's religiously inappropriate, but imagine, every single person in the world has different milos and different chasronos. So typish, how do we look at that person's milos and say, oh, I wish my spouse had those milos. Yeah, but what about the milos that your spouse has, that you have, and they don't have? How you talking? We're not trying to build a bionic person, take everyone's milos, bionic man, everyone's milos, and this person is perfect. It's impossible to be perfect. So the fact that this person has certain milos comes as opposed to other milos. So even aside from Losachmod, how can a person look at Zulas, look at someone else, and use that as a frame of reference for one's own marriage? But perhaps, unfortunately, the most coherent reason, aside from those two, the religious and the logical argument, is that through time one learns that you never know what's going on b'chadrei chadarim. Of course that's true. Everything looks perfect. Everything looks wonderful. Everything looks great for them. But you don't know what happens when they close their doors. This is not just theoretical. Rachmana Litzlan, time is proven. In and out, time and time again. One never knows from seeing a marriage at one situation what the marriage is really like. So forget about Losachmod. Forget about each person's own milos. It's imprudent. Because what you think is the best marriage, Rachmana Litzlan, is not necessarily so. Never ever compare ourselves to other marriages. The last D, the last part of marriage, perhaps the most important part of Shalom Bayis, is to discover, to look at marriage as an opportunity to discover about one's spouse, to learn new things, to grow, to mature together. The key to discovering about your spouse, discovering about yourself, is communication. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Adam and Chava connected from the back. They're really one person, according to the Medrash Rashi points out, Rishis Rabbi elaborates on it further. Adam and Chava were really connected in the back, which means, if you think about it, it was impossible for Adam and Chava to ever see anything from the same perspective. When they were first made, it was impossible for them to look at anything together. They had to turn around for Adam to see something and for Chava to see something. That was Metchila, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Adam and Chava like that. But Lavasov, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu took Achas Mitzalosov, HaKadosh Baruch Hu separated us. He gave us a mandate to be two different people, to be able to look at each other and look at the same thing. From different perspectives, perhaps, but to try to fit into the other person's shoes and try to see something at the same time as someone else from your spouse's perspective as well. Not only should one try to communicate and try to understand things from the other person's perspective, try as one can, but now it's also a chiyuv for us to look at each other's spouse, focus, as we mentioned before, not only on my needs, but on my spouse's needs. Because now, we're two different people who can join together by focusing on each other's needs. Communication, of course, is an ideal way of trying to figure out about another person, trying to understand what makes another person tick. But imagine a husband who comes home, 8 o'clock at night, he was stuck on a reclaim in Kol, and his wife's frustrated, she doesn't understand why he came home so late, and she was dealing with the kids, and she's tired out, and she speaks to him, perhaps, in a way which is not so appropriate. There are two ways to approach the situation. Number one is communicate. Okay, stop everything, sit down, try to figure out, dear, why are you speaking to me like that? But that's a little bit of a story. It doesn't really seem to make sense. It's a fairy tale. It doesn't seem to be so logical. You can't do that in the heat of an argument, the heat of something which is going incorrectly. Sometimes it's important to have the so, they point out in the next idea, the quote from Reb Chaim, "Von Akasha starb minisht." What does that mean? You don't die from Akasha. Sometimes in life, it's important to view things as Akasha. Instead of saying, I want to understand right now why my spouse is reacting to a certain situation in a certain way, sometimes it's good to just, as they say in Yeshivas, Bleib Shrer, just realize this is not my spouse normally. Must be something strange is going on. I'll table it for later and try to figure out why this is happening. Communication doesn't always have to be at the various times that something happens, trying now to be Sherlock Holmes and try to discover what's making that happen. The very fact that you realize that this is a little bit out of sync, that's not the normal way, it's Akasha. And sometimes when you have Akasha, that itself is helpful. Just realize it's Akasha. But Akasha, Shtarbanish. No one died from Akasha. You can leave it, Tzarech Iyum. Often, another thing to keep in mind during communication, during the time that people, husband and wife, sit down to try to talk to each other, is the situation I heard once from Dr. Levy. Dr. Neil Levy, who still teaches marriage, couples counseling in the RTP, the Rabbinic Training Program courses, the Webster Honors Program, once pointed out that there was a husband and wife that came to him for marriage therapy because they had a major machlokas as to in which direction to put the toilet paper in the bathroom. Should it be with the toilet paper facing out or facing in? He was Mavaza, he said, can you imagine how low people can stoop, Rachman al-Islam? But what's pshat? Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Are they crazy? Didn't they realize that they should laugh at themselves like we're laughing at them? What were they thinking? The answer is that behind every situation in marriage is not only the situation, the discussion at hand, but there's always a little bit of a sense of self. Amazing. I ask you one little thing. Put the toilet paper in the right way. You can't even do that for me? You really are not matching me. You know, I can't believe you. That's one little thing. That's what you get upset about. Must be you really don't care about our marriage. You can see how something which is insignificant can take on a whole new dimension, a whole new meaning. The point is not the toilet paper per se. The point is what they represent. And often when one's keeping the lines of communication open, it's important to realize that what you're discussing on one level is the very fact that supper was burnt. But what you're really discussing is the sense of self, which could come, perhaps, from disagreements. And that's something which is not only up in the mind intellectually, that's something which should come out as well during the discussion, to realize that often things have representative value way beyond what they themselves are worth. Often when one is communicating with one's spouse, they point out that as one's developing in dating, a signal that things are proceeding, things are going to get a little better, is that the people that are dating compliment each other. Often a way to build a relationship is to compliment and try to show someone that you appreciate what he or she does. You appreciate them a little bit. Chas v'shalom should that stop after marriage. Complimenting should increase even more. But often, in the busy lifestyles that we have, complimenting takes a whole new turn. You know, I really appreciate that you cleaned up the kitchen, but how come you did that? So imagine what a person did. They took complimenting, and instead of viewing the complimenting as something which is intrinsically valuable, the compliment lost value because it had the but, and then you had a criticism on top of it. Tartareya, so two things wrong. No compliment, and a criticism instead of a compliment. So often, when keeping communication and wiser communication open, it's important to compliment, but don't say but. Hanocha Aleph, Hanocha Beis. Two things are different. Let the compliments stay, and then there are also things that can improve as well. Perhaps the most important technique in communication, be a good listener. Very often the way communications work is that we interrupt. William Safire pointed out many years ago in his column on language in the New York Times Magazine that the way New Yorkers show interest in what someone else is saying is by interrupting. Meaning, that's what happens. When you're saying something really exciting, I have to interrupt you. That's why I show you really want to be involved in your conversation. It's not a sorry to mention quite like you think in the Midwest. That's the normal way people talk. We interrupt and we show we're really into it together. That might be true, perhaps it's not true, but it shouldn't be true in marriage. It's important to listen. And listening itself is an avodah often for people that grew up in New York. But to listen, to hear what a person is saying, that itself is important. But then, point number two is that often when a person's listening, even if they don't interrupt, what the conversation does is make the person themselves relate. In their effort to show they relate to what the other person is saying, they bring in their own situations which show they can relate. So the wife says, you know, I was really tired today, I went to the doctor and I trimmed out a car service and it really took a long time. The husband says, yeah, you know, that happened to me the other day also. I went and I trimmed out a car service. Imagine, in Martha Nights, every single car that passed me was filled with people and I was standing for 45 minutes on Broadway trying to find the car service. Husband was listening. He means to show his wife that he can relate. But often what can happen is instead of the wife saying what she said and that being appreciated at face value, that becomes overshadowed by the husband. And then the wife, instead of feeling heard, feels like she's drowned out. It's often important to try to find a balance between showing that what the spouse is saying can resonate with you and not drowning out what the person is saying by bringing in your own situations to the extreme. And then it's important to just listen. Hear what the person says. Validate, appreciate, listen to what they're saying. Try to discover new aspects about your spouse. Even when one is discussing, when one's listening, when one is talking to his or her spouse, don't overdose. What's an overdose? Often an overdose is an amount of medicine which in small amounts could be very helpful, can ameliorate a situation. But in large amounts, can cause the show and be harmful or fatal. Criticism, discussions, things that a person is peeved at, if it's stressed in the right way, with a normal dose, can be conduits for growth. But if one overdoes it, then instead of being something which is helpful, one can have an overdose, which Rabbanu Litzlan, is harmful. They always point out that whether the kitchen sink has dishes in it or not, the kitchen sink should never go into any argument. Usually the kitchen sink means, that's the famous term which people use to show everything else under the sun, even during the kitchen sink. Kitchen sink has place in a house, but never in an argument. One should never try to bring in, you know, not only that, and even do this, and even do that. All that does is make things into a confederation, make things flare up instead of being able to discuss the issue at hand. Don't overdose on discussions. And the last point is that often when one is listening, one's communicating, one's trying to discuss things with one's spouse, probe. Try to understand what makes the person who he or she is. Try to relate to the person's experiences, person's background, person's family, person's situations, person's friends. Every person is such a rich symphony of experiences, situations they've been in way before marriage. Try to use any situation that you're discussing as a key to understanding the person more, to growing, to being able to understand more about the person. They often point out there was a machlokas as the Adam was being discovered as to what the perfect model is for Adam. All those that are physics people here. It used to be they used to think the onion was the perfect model. It was the nucleus in the middle, correct? Nucleus in the middle, and then there was the electrons were floating around the onion. Then they realized Bohr's model. Bohr realized afterwards that it's not really that it's an onion, but that you can have the nucleus in the middle, and that electrons really float. The electrons are probably somewhere, but they could really be circulating in any specific place, correct? So it used to be we thought of things as an onion, concentric circles, and then the atom was there was a nucleus in the middle, and then the electrons go all over the place, like the solar system, all around the nucleus. The same thing is true often in marriage. My wife often points out that in marriage, as people are dating, when you first date someone, you have a little A discussion. The skin of the onion. Hopefully on dates, as dates continue, you have layers of the onion are peeled away. One can hopefully get closer and closer to what makes a person really who or she is. But often, in many situations, we're not so simple. We're not just onions that you can probe deeper and deeper. Often what sometimes is very deep within a person comes to the surface, like the atom. Sometimes it's here, sometimes it's there. Sometimes it comes to the surface in another situation. Use those as advantages. Use our discovery of atoms, the way they are now, as a model for marriage. That often what might be hidden at one time might be something which surfaces at another time. We should all be zolche, to be dedicated, to develop ourselves, and to discover about our spouses. And with that, we should be zolche, as the Mepharshim points out, we daven on the first night of Rosh Hashanah, that the Baruch Hu should be mechadish aleinu shana tova u'mesuka. Why redundant? Why the redundancy? Tova and mesuka? If it's good, won't it be sweet? If it's sweet, why won't it be good? The answer, some point out, is that we don't understand Tavshi D'Rachmanu. We don't understand how HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. We believe that everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is Tov. But we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please, let it not only be that us, we should be Zolcha to fix our Shalom Bayis, together with all of Chai Yisrael, not only have a Shana Tova, a year which to you HaKadosh Baruch Hu is good, but a year of Ezra Hashem, which we all realize to our eyes and ears is Mesuka as well. Can you rest? Any questions? You don't have to, don't worry. Yes, so who's shy? No, anyone shy? Okay. Gewaldig. Straya.
And if you can sign the sheet that's on the table in Pitto there. Again, next week, the men's share is in Moss Hall, one of the classrooms back there at 8:30. The women's share is Tuesday night at the home of the Shack. It's 490 apartment 3C.
Drink.